A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, everyone. Welcome. It is the Red Men TV podcast. I am back after a short hiatus, like the football, actually, in some regards. But I have come back with a bang, unlike the football, which came back as a bit of a damp squib. We talked about that on the Final Word show. I'm sure it'll come up in passing throughout this show. But I've got a wonderful panel of guests with me today. I've got Sam Walker, I've got Georgia Stevens, and I've got Mr. Steve Hoare as well, who is showing some very, very clean lines today. Look at you, Steve, you handsome devil, with your plain backdrop and your well-shorn hair.
Actually, it was a DIY job over the weekend. It was a Father's Day special. I thought at some point someone's going to take a photograph of me. So I thought I did have a beard and I had like the egg in the nest haircut because I hadn't bothered with it. Mm. So it was literally an all-round shave at the same time.
That's not normally what people would refer to as a Father's Day special, but that's fine. Right, okay, so we're going to start with a kickoff question. Well, I've got you, Steve. I'll come to you first. It comes from Adam Boland, who asks, what is your death row final meal?
Oh, good question. That is probably an Indian. Chicken madras, pilau rice, garlic naan, pint of tiger beer with it. I think that's what I'll go for. Yeah,
the most cliched beer you can possibly have while in that situation. I think that's perfect.
If you're gonna be in there, why not? And plus, like, imagine drinking an Italian beer with like a few long. Plus, if they're gonna electrocute me to death, I'll be dead. So if I shit myself, they're the ones to clean that up. Unless they just leave me. Yeah. I don't have to worry about the day after. Like, usually when you have a curry, that's something you've got to consider.
Yeah, you've got to plan in your next 24 hours. Exactly. Yeah.
Like, in my schedule, it's like, morning meetings, sort of play with the kids, 2 hours of excruciating pain, and then in my diary where I don't have to worry about it. So, yeah, I'll go for a nice Indian, I think.
Amazing. Okay, I somehow can't help but feel that George's answer won't be anywhere near as disgusting. George, what's your final death row meal?
I was going to go with the roast dinner, but like a full, like all the trimmings, borderline Christmas dinner. Probably gammon for the meat because you just go all out. Yeah, probably that. I'm not too fussed about the drink, just whatever.
But I mean, come on, they're going to ask you the question, Georgia.
I don't know. I'm not too fussed. I wouldn't be that. If you're gonna be bumped off within the next hour, I'd like just to scram something and go.
Just a glass of tap water. You've come all this way. Oh, yeah, this absolute disgrace. But imagine that your last meal and going, and you go, if only I'd just had a.
I don't think my food would be high on my priority list if I'm getting bumped off within the next hour, most likely for a crime I didn't commit.
Oh, okay, sure, yeah.
whatever I'm getting killed for. I'm filling my boots like I did it. So yeah.
Yeah, that's enjoy fair. Your last few moments. Sam, what about you?
Well, you both picked good choices there, to be honest. So I'm quite an anxious person, so I'll be honest with you. Like, when I'd be sitting there knowing I'm going to die in an hour, I probably wouldn't eat anything. But for this case, I'll go with salt and pepper chicken. Salt and pepper chicken wings and chips. it's hard to pick where I'm getting the chips from. Probably like five portions of Mackey's chips to go with it as well. And to drink, I'd probably go with, you know what? I've quite enjoyed a bottle of Corona over this period of time. I'm not even being funny. It's probably because it gets left in the Asda on its own. No one buys it and it's on sale. that's smart, isn't it? So, honestly, I've been enjoying a few bottles of Corona in this sort of period. So that's probably me, to be honest.
Yeah, okay, I like Sam.
I like how Sam said, I wouldn't be hungry, but I get five lots of
mac. Yeah, you've got it. Once I've got my head around dying, I'd probably be all right.
Yeah. For me, it's a toss-up between like an amazing full English and my dad's Christmas dinner with absolutely everything. And then like I've always had an obsession with Mackey's chocolate milkshakes, even though they're not. I'm not sure any of Mackey's milkshakes actually taste like the what they're meant to taste like. They pretty much all taste identical. It's a bit like that The Simpsons bit with the Duff beer, where they're saying like, nah, new beer's Duff light, Duff dry, blah, blah, and it all just comes out of the same hose and into the tank. But yeah, no, I'd probably go with that. Let us know yours in the comments underneath if you're watching on YouTube, or you can tweet to at the Redmen TV using hashtag death row meal and then lash it in there. Yeah. Always nice to keep that Twitter account on topic, I think. So if you're new to the Redmen podcast, welcome aboard. We're going to be doing this throughout the remainder of the season. I ask my guests to each bring a topic of discussion. It can be Liverpool related, it can be football related. And then we ask and answer some of your questions toward the end as well. Look, rather than me picking an actual nailed on topic of this, I just want to reference the Naby Keita allegations that are going around on social media at the moment, and reference them as much as we're not going to discuss them. But also I would point out to people online is that obviously an allegation has been made against Naby Keita. We don't know how true that is or isn't, but that doesn't mean that we should jump to the defence of either. In this instance, obviously, if there's more to it, then we have to kind of wait and see. But yeah, obviously from a Liverpool fan perspective, we'll all be hoping that this is a fanless allegation. But that doesn't mean that any abuse should be turned towards the person. It also means that, you know, we just have to wait and see, basically, because none of us actually knows what happened. So yeah, we won't be commenting on it any further, but I just wanted to bring it to people's attention that we're not brushing it under the rug, because obviously that is it's a very, very serious allegation that's been leveled against them. And obviously when we know how Liverpool and how, you know, maybe even the police in this instance are dealing with that, then we'll respond to it further. So obviously, we saw the Reds came back. We played Dieppe in the Merseyside derby. It was a bit poo. Let's be honest about that. And if you want to talk about the use of five subs, is this in reference particularly to what you've seen in the match, or just in a general thing?
Just in general, across the whole football that I've been watching. I think I've watched 80% of all the Premier League games that have come back so far. Been watching pretty much all of them. And what I would say, Paul, is that, although I understand, you know, obviously from a science point of view and a player preservation point of view, the use of five subs, I do think it's detracting a bit from the game. Mm-hmm. I also think it is a huge advantage for certain teams in certain situations. I think that can't be underestimated. And I'll be honest, I'm not sure whether I'm for or against it. I was going to say, I'll chat with you guys about it. Like, for example, I think Dean Smith of Aston Villa mentioned, you know, he was... Chris Wilder as well, Sheffield United, they were against it, and it makes sense because their squads probably aren't as good. Whereas I watched Chelsea, for example, Chelsea played Villa and they bring on Barkley, they bring on Pulisic, they bring on Tammy Abraham, they bring on Reece James, and whereas, you know, and Villa can't match that. Villa haven't got four lads as good as that in their starting lineup. And I think, so I do get where he's coming from. Obviously, the flip side is, you know, injuries, and you've got to be careful. We have seen already a few players do hamstrings and that. And I'll be honest, I just don't know where I stand. I think it is of a detriment to the games and of the competitiveness of the league. But on a flip side, I do understand the injury situation, so I'm not sure what they could have done differently. I just don't think I like it, if I'm honest.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I think it's very true, isn't it, Sam? And we're seeing... I don't think Burnley even fielded the full nine subs or whatever it was that you're allowed. I think they only had seven against City. Obviously, they had their own injury problems, and there comes a point where it's like, what's the point in throwing an extra body into the mix? And it's exactly that, isn't it? It's tough because we're sitting here going, it favours the big teams, and we've just drawn our first game back, and we're already, you know, I think we'll probably feel that it should favour Liverpool going forward. So maybe that will change our opinion of it when we see Liverpool win a few games and they're able to make those subs. But I don't think I totally disagree. I think Steve's kind of right there. It does feel like it's a competitive advantage to the teams like Manchester City in particular.
Yeah, definitely. And if you think about our game on Sunday, Everton had two goalies on the bench. You know, that just kind of explains it all. They couldn't get the 9 subs out. I don't like it personally. I understand it, like Steve said, 100%. But I'm with Wilder on it. You start the season. We can all accept there's no fans. That's just life. That's just reality. But we start the season with the idea that you have a squad where you can use three subs per match. You roughly know how many games you're going to play, etc., etc. Now, again, I can understand the no fans. That's just part of where we are. But to then change the laws with subs, it's a case of, well, you know, like you need to be fielding the players that are fitter rather than the better players. If you've got 11 players who are in a better position to start the game and bring three on rather than starting players you can play. Liverpool did it. We played Minamino for 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. Klopp said that's by design. No, yeah. Really, that's a bit of a, you know, using the system a little bit. I personally don't like it, and it's killing games as well. There's been two or three games already where you've had 5 or even 10 players come on second half, and it's gone like an international friendly. Liverpool Everton was until Lovren came on. It was an international friendly in the last 20 minutes. I don't like it. That's my personal view anyway.
What about you, Georgia?
No, I think I just agree with everything that we're saying. There's a difference between liking it and understanding it, like Sam said, of, you know, what else would we do to stop these? We've seen it with the injuries and things like that. What's the other options? And I'm sure they've probably looked at that. If, you know, do we change the length of the game? Well, no, then you're completely changing what people are signing up for. You're changing the game of football, full stop, and you're already kind of doing that by adding extra substitutions, but it's not something that's completely unheard of. So I think, but at the same time, yeah, it makes it that little bit more unbalanced. But as much as it is, it's, you know, fielding the correct players and, you know, field your fitter players rather than your better ones. It works the other way too, if other teams can, you know, field their fitter player rather than the... There's a lot of there's a whole new sort of tactical element to the game now, and I think we saw that with Klopp of kind of using a half-time substitution because it didn't count as one of the three slots.
Yeah.
And there's just like a whole new kind of game that's getting played off the pitch in terms of tactics now.
Yeah, I think, just to bring it back to you, Steve, look, again, we're fans of one of the top teams. We're fans of a team that have got enough depth. You know, and this might, on a positive sense, it might mean more game time for Nico Williams or Harvey Elliott, and certainly more for the likes of Minamino and you know possibly Naby Keita as well. You know, lads who need to get on the pitch. So from our perspective, I mean, that's why I find this quite interesting, is that we should probably be in favour of this, because it's most likely to benefit Liverpool, and not just this season, but actually potentially moving forward. But I agree, and maybe the sample size is too small because it's only the first game back for the league and we don't know quite how this is going to work out. But really, you know, you probably got to talk on 2 or 3 games so everyone gets back up to speed in terms of fitness, by which point most of the things will probably be decided anyway. And then, is this going to be, I mean, I wonder whether, for me personally, I've been listening with the crowds, with the crowd sound pumped in, and it's put a layer of conceit over it for me, because I felt like it makes it feel like you're watching a proper game. But when you add the 5 subs into the empty stadium thing, you're right. I think it does. I think it's making football a little bit, it's making it less serious.
And also, I think they will seriously consider keeping it as well, like for going forward. Now they've done it, I think they would like to keep it. And I'm not a big fan. I agree with Sam. You know, when 10 new players are entering the pitch, so, you know, you're getting 32 players playing in the same game. It just, I don't know, man. It just doesn't feel, it affects the flow of every single game. And again, I do understand in this mini situation where, you know, players, they weren't allowed to train. They were like, 2 or 3 weeks pre-season. So I can't think, I do get it to an extent. And I'm not even about the competitive advantage. It is one, and I get it, and it does favour Liverpool. So from my point of view, yeah, it does benefit us. But from just watching footy matches, you know, I was watching that Villa Chelsea game, and it was sub on, 2 off, 2 on, and it was just a bit like it's starting to become a little bit farcical. Listen, like I say, I don't know what the right answer is, and if there is one, maybe you could have met in the middle and done 4. I don't know if that would have made a difference, but I hope that next season they don't keep it, even though, again, it would benefit us personally.
Yeah.
Football,
yeah.
Well, I hope they get rid of it.
Does the drinks break add to that, do you think?
Yeah, for sure. And again, that makes sense to me, because you know, they can't start any bottle in on side of the pitch where the fella can go and grab his drink. They have to go and get their own water bottle that's been sanitised. And no, so I again, I do understand that, but it's another thing that just makes it. It definitely affected the flow of the derby. It's affected the flow of every game I watched. You know, you see a ball go out for a corner when a team's like about to, you know, they feel like a bit of momentum. It's like right drinks, and it's like, it's not, again, it's one of those. But we're living in strange times, and we all have to do, you know, we have to accept that there are things such as this, but you don't have to like it. You know, you can't. This is understandable, but it's still a little bit crap.
Anyone want to make a case for the defence? No.
And I defend referees. They've got to do the full 90.
Go on. Yeah.
Good point, isn't it?
Yeah.
John Moss was blowing the other day, I'll be honest. Sorry for John. You can tell me your gym's been closed around by where John lives. You know what I mean?
No, he's not been doing his couch to 5K during the lockdown. No, it's fair. It's a good point. No, I think it is an interesting point. And I think in some regards, Georgia, seeing the Bundesliga come back, I think, took a lot of the sting off all of this. So we didn't have high expectations of the football, and we knew it was going to be a bit weird. And we knew that, like, again, having crowd noise is probably there's a value to having it. But in terms of us seeing, this is now, we finally got some football that we can properly get into. And look, if people got into the Bundesliga fair, but for most of us, you've got your football team. And getting to see a football team, it stands out above all other football. So we've got that. But now, of course, we're seeing, as kind of Steve points out, we're also seeing what's getting in the way of that, because we know what that looks like. We know what Liverpool are meant to look like. I mean, it might still be a bit early. It's one game of football and it was a derby to really draw any positive conclusions. But yeah, it's we will have questions, and I think, you know, we're always going to look at it with a bit of a sceptical eye, because no one really likes change in football.
Yeah, I think that the main thing is we've got something to compare it to. We have emotions and memories and things attached to that. So we can go back 3 months, 4 months to the Premier League, how we felt during the weekend, build up to the game, during the game, after the game. When the Bundesliga came back, we didn't really have any of that. We were still comparing it to the Premier League of, you know, match day, things like that. Unless you followed the Bundesliga and you had that connection to it. We didn't have, so I think in the back of everyone's mind was when the Prem was coming back, it was, we're going to feel the same. It's going to be footies back, blah, blah, blah. The reason we didn't like the Bundesliga because we had no investment in it. And now that it's back and we've still got there's still that bit of unsettling kind of, it's not the same. Oh, yeah. And you feel a bit dejected. But that's just the way it is. Like we said, it's kind of the world we're living in right now, and it's better than nothing.
Yeah. What's quite funny about the game in particular at the weekend and the weird things that happen around it, Sam, my mother-in-law just come round to drop the shopping order off that we've had to her house, and her husband is a big Evertonian. They obviously watched the game, and their words were, "The major's changing a porter cabin." It took us half an hour to recover from that laughing. You know, that's you know, there's a lot of very weird things happening around footy, and I think you know, when you're watching Liverpool walk out through the car park into the ground, you know that you're definitely facing an unusual set of circumstances.
Yeah, the inside Liverpool will be interesting next week, won't it? From the Stanley Park and the Annie Road car park,
telephoto lens.
Yeah, I mean. It is, and I think Klopp made reference to it, didn't he? He said, you know, it's the first time we've kind of had to do these new things and we're adjusting. But, yeah, you know, it's just interesting then listening to even, like, saying the drinks break and stuff. And now we've got football back. And were the Bundesliga doing drinks breaks? Have the Spanish League been doing? I'm not sure. I guess the Spanish League might have. But I didn't notice it, probably because I didn't care enough. Maybe the odd game. But now I'm watching it. I completely agree with Steve, you know. It is a completely different product now, and all the surrounding things. Even the punditry. I was watching BT. I can't remember what game it was, but Peter Crouch was at home, and someone like Jenis or whatever was in the studio, or Rio Ferdinand. And again, it's just bizarre. When I'm watching Liverpool Everton, at times I forget that we're in this pandemic. Yeah. But then, like, when I see that and see Peter Crouch and his kids in the background and his missus and about and stuff, it's like it's a smack back to reality that we've got all these strange circumstances going on. And And yeah, but you know what, mate? Let's just be glad we've got something to watch, because it was the damn sight shitter before, wasn't it?
Any world where there's more Abby Clancy in my life is no bad thing, as far as I'm concerned. But the only hypothesize a little around this thing. My only concern about the drinks break is that the American TV has been pushing for it for ages. Someone's going to put an advert break in there if they don't get rid of that soon. Because that's the way it all moves. You know, I remember after the USA 94, there was a load of proposals put together to how to make soccer, you know, take off in America. And there was talk about, you know, using the quarters format, putting zones on the pitch and all that kind of stuff. And that's something that we do need to be wary of, because, you know, if that drinks break persists into next season particularly, don't be shocked if we cut to a 2-3 minute advert break while they're having it.
Like I say, again, I completely understand that you can't just grab a bottle or you might, you know, pass the drink around the team and all that, you know, like anyone.
Steve, what if they just squirt a little bit on the floor first? Doesn't that fix it?
Just a wipe on your t-shirt and spit the first bit out. It's bizarre, mate. And again, I think we all understand the reasoning for it. I do find that bit a little bit odd, because in theory, anyone who's around them bottles shouldn't have coronavirus, because they've all been tested and stuff. But again, you understand that, you know, they get tested on the Thursday, they play on the Saturday, what did they do on the Friday? So I do understand it to an extent. I just think, is it that hard to have a bottle next to the Saturday where you play on your side of the pitch with your name on it, and you can just go and grab it whenever you fancy a little drink?
I've seen how many used cups there are in our office. And I know that people will grab something nearer than actually walk to get the thing that's already theirs. So yeah, but I think it's definitely something that, you know, I've absolutely called that. By the way, there's no way that if those drink, I guarantee you, I'm calling it now. If drinks break still exists when the season restarts for next season and it's still behind closed doors and it's still like this, they will sky. There's no way Sky are not pouncing on an opportunity just to lash something in there.
A little Sky bet advert on there.
Oh, yeah, Martin Tyler just telling you what the latest blockbuster release is on Sky Movies, you know, whatever. Go on, Georgia.
Already they're kind of scrambling for what to do, because there's only so much you can show players drinking. So during the Liverpool game, it was like cut to James Milner putting an ice pack on his thigh for 2 minutes. And it was like, nobody wants to see that. Show us a highlight, show us what... You can tell they're already kind of wondering, how do we fill this gap?
Yeah. Very, 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 very strange indeed. Okay, so Georgia, well, got you. You wanted to talk about the pre-season transitional period?
Yeah, we spoke about it on the final word as well, and it kind of links to what Steve's saying as well, is that we've kind of got this weird period now where football's changed and things like that, and it's very international friendly. It's very kind of, not that it's not competitive, but there's certainly an edge taken off it. I'm just kind of, we spoke about sort of players getting introduced, players getting extra time that they wouldn't normally get, sort of bedded into the squad for Liverpool, so Minamino, Keita, things like that. Is now this period, you know, for Liverpool, especially once the league's wrapped up, is that pre-season then? Are we starting pre-season? Are we going into, right, what's happening for next season? Because pre-season as a whole is going to be something that's shortened, chopped and changed, maybe looked at completely different. I mean, we're used to kind of international tours as a club. That's probably not going to happen. So just kind of putting that to people of what do we think pre-season will look like going forward, but also is now sort of pre-season.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? And Sam, I mean, the talk at the moment, I mean, particularly for Liverpool, the league season's going to finish on the 25th of July, which means that Liverpool, because if they've got no other cup commitments, will be done. Then obviously there'll be the whatever celebrations look like to follow that, etc. The FA Cup final, I think, is scheduled for the first week in August. We're going to talk about the Champions League. You want to talk about that in a little bit as well. Liverpool probably have then got... And then the rumours right now is, I think it's the 12th, 13th, 14th or something of September, they're talking about the start date for the new season. So you're talking, 7 weeks between seasons for Liverpool, there or thereabouts? What do you, what, you know, George is right. I mean, I guess do Liverpool just treat this season in isolation? Do you know, and just get toward the end of it, and then give everyone a couple of weeks off, and then put a month into pre-season? Or, I mean, yeah, it's a conundrum for the manager.
Yeah, definitely. And I think there's a couple of sides to this. Well, a few sides to this. Number one is, I personally believe for Liverpool that we're already going to start to see the transition of our evolution as a side from now. And we don't need to be tried and tested. We're going to win the league, even if we draw six games, or, you know, City slip when they've got a couple of cup games, whatever. It's going to happen. So I think, like, even you saw against Everton, you know, he didn't have to play Minamino from the start, but he did. He didn't have to play Matip, but he did. You know, he didn't have to play Keita, but he did. And I think we're going to start to see changes in our system from now moving into next season, which will benefit us.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
In terms of the actual structure, the sort of way we're going to see the games is, 7 weeks is a long time. And if you think about football finishes in end of May, June, then they are pretty much most of June off and they're back. Some players will play international football, then they'll have 3 weeks off, then they'll be back. Most seasons, there is an international tournament or set of games where you get players like last season, Mane and Mahrez coming back with 2 weeks or a week. So to have 2 weeks off in August, then 4 or 5 weeks training will actually do most football teams good. Mm-hmm. Where it's going to probably wipe teams out is going to be the lower leagues. If they do restart, they're going to have been not playing football for like 6 months. Mm-hmm. They're going to be struggling. So I actually think it works okay. If City win the Champions League, I hope not, then they're going to have about 2 weeks off. But such is life, isn't it, with success? I actually think it worked quite well for us. It's just going to be interesting to see what it looks like, the game itself, come September.
That's my
sort of wonder.
Yeah, what about you, Steve?
Yeah, I'll be honest, I'm not sure if Klopp will be thinking that far ahead just about yet. I think there will definitely be a case for him to be resting players and rotating players throughout this period. I think that's fair. But I don't think he will, per se, you know, just be worrying about next season already. I think he'll just be managing the squad now to make sure no one gets hurt before the end of this season. And then, like Sam says, if it is 7 weeks, that's a lot. You know, that's more than he usually gets. You know, you might just say to him, listen, go and have 2 weeks. They can't really go anywhere on holiday anyway. I doubt he'll let them go abroad. Because then they have to, because there's quarantine periods and stuff when they come back. So, you know, go and spend a week in a caravan in Talacher or something and then come back and then I said they'll have 4 or 5 weeks. So I don't think it'll be a big issue. I don't think that'll be on their mind just about yet. I think if you're someone like a Man City, you know, or want another team who's still in this Champions League format, City are still in the FA Cup as well, which they've got, they're probably going to go and win. I do think that's why Pep is heavily rotating already. You know, we've already seen that. He knows that he can't win the Premier League anyway, and they're not going to finish outside the top four. So it's almost, he's kind of getting his squad ready to play this Champions League. He's almost using these league games now to build up for that mini tournament in the FA Cup. So I think some teams will be think what George said. I think some are already planning for it, where I think Liverpool are just going to say, you know, we'll just get through this one, look after everyone, because injuries are bound to happen with so many games. And then we can kind of, when August comes, we'll kind of see where we are. The only thing I do think, Paul, is that if anyone's going to sign anyone, I think that's when it might become harder, because I don't, like I say, there's not going to be a tour to go on to get to know the lads, and there's not going to be, I don't imagine there's going to be tons of friendlies, because it's going to be hard to get anyone to play against. I think that's where it might be an issue. If you sign someone, that might be difficult. But I don't think fitness-wise, I don't think it's that big a deal just about yet.
Yeah, I agree on that. I think when you look at for me, you've got to look at our rivals, and particularly that's Manchester City, isn't it? And I think, and this kind of leads into what your topic here, Sam, is the Champions League stuff. And Liverpool, yes, they've had a break. So they've had the three-month break the same as everyone, which I actually think benefits us in some ways more than most, because of how much footy all of our top players have played over the last three seasons, particularly the likes of Mo Salah, who finished the Champions League injured, had 2 weeks on a beach, went to the World Cup, and then went straight back into the season pretty much, and then did the same with the African Cup of Nations last summer as well, having got to the Champions League final. I weirdly think this summer is going to benefit Liverpool more than most, and some of that will depend on what happens. Like, you know, Chelsea aren't likely to get beyond the next round because they're already 3-0 down to Bayern Munich and what have you. But Man City in particular, you're right. I think for them, they've got to gear up to win, because look, they're probably not going to be in the Champions League next season, are they? So it's an all or nothing for Pep Guardiola in this. So yeah, that you might find that he actually said Klopp's got no need to sacrifice anything for anything at this point, because you just got to get the Premier League one, and then you can decide whether you want to go and break points records if it's still on, or whether you want to start building your squad, getting ready for next season. But let's do the Champions League stuff. Yeah, it's been confirmed. It's coming back as like a single game shootout tournament being played in Portugal in 2 weeks in the middle of August. Yeah, go for it.
So my sort of biggest concern with this is, obviously, we've gone over all the pitfalls to football already. We've already sort of slagged the game off and called it an international friendly sort of league. But now add in the fact that, for me, and I'm going to sort of hammer City a little bit here. The reason why City haven't won the Champions League is because they haven't got that special thing as a club that links the fans, the players, the history, that spark you need to pull off results like Barcelona, like you know, Chelsea, like Istanbul, so on and so forth. We've been there. Loads of other clubs like Barcelona have had that as well. Okay, we've all the winners have had moments. And I think the new format is a new competition. First of all, I'm not sure how I feel about Chelsea going playing Bayern Munich in Turkey or whatever it's going to be in a second leg. And how does that work then? The fact that, you know, the first game had loads of fans. I know they got whooped, but they had loads of fans. You know, they can claim the pressure, I don't know. And the second leg, which will be Bayern's home game, will be in a neutral ground. And I just don't really understand how that works. And then following on from that, so we got knocked out by Atletico Madrid. Away goals played a huge part. The quarterfinals are going to be no home and away ties. And then the semis and the final. I just think, I don't understand how that competition can stand up, given what it's always been about for years. You know, they should have renamed it for this season just for the, you know, I don't know. But, and then following from that, is this the end of away goals? I actually hope so.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's an interesting stuff. I mean, I was looking into this, and City haven't played their home leg against Real Madrid, so there's still talk that they might yet be able to play these games at home, but also the Dragao Stadium has been put aside for these games so they can get the round of 16 ones, which would be the 7th and 8th of August. And again, this just feeds into this idea of like Man City, you know, yes, Man City might be more prepared for the early stages of the Premier League because they might just have to play through, you know, that might be what they need to do, but that doesn't necessarily favour them at the back end. But 7th and 8th of August is the last 16, remaining last 16 games, which obviously includes Chelsea away at Bayern Munich, City at home to Real Madrid. Then the 12th to the 15th will be the quarterfinals, the 18th and 19th will be the semi-finals, and the 23rd of August for the final. And again, Steve, bearing in mind that, you know, we already look at Man City this week. They played last night. they play Chelsea again on Thursday, is it? And then they play is it Newcastle, I think, in the cup or something. Or they got the FA Cup game at the weekend. Like, that's potentially an insane couple of months if they've got ambitions to win the Champions League.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's worth saying, like, they might not even get past Real Madrid yet. You know, they've got a big advantage. They have got a big advantage. Haven't won over there or whatever, but they're not guaranteed. But my issue with this one again is that the Premier League changed a little bit. It did change a little bit because the five subs and the drink, but it's not huge. Everyone's playing each other twice, home and away. And I get there are caveats to it. Essentially, we've just turned the FA, we've just turned the Champions League, which is a two-legged tie, into the World Cup.
Yeah.
That's what we've done. It's a summer tournament where with one game and stuff like that. Again, who that benefits, I don't know. Like I personally agree. I don't like the away goals rule. I think it's rubbish. But I do like the home and away nature. You know, someone's got to come into Anfield on a European Cup semi final and get something. You know, and like if we had to play Barcelona in a neutral venue, we'd have lost. You know, at that point, we wouldn't have won 4-0. We'd have won out. So again. No fans, and I get it all. Basically, we know why this one's happening. This is nothing to do with finishing the competition. This one is about money. It's about, you know, UEFA needs those games to be played, and I get it. And this is one that won't stick because the last thing they're going to do is take games out of the Champions League. If anything, they're going to add more into it. Yeah. So this is very much a needs must, and I do understand it. You know, you talk about asterisks against titles and stuff like that. I mean, whoever wins this, whether it's Madrid, Barca, whoever it is, this one is, there's a massive, massive big asterisk on this one. Because essentially, you will have played, you know, three fewer games. That is an issue, I think. I do think for the integrity of that competition, I do think that counts. But again, we're living in this mad world where, you know, we're, rather than being in an office or a studio recording this, we're on Skype in our houses or whatever.
Yeah.
It's adapting.
Yeah. I think, George, that's right. Actually, it's something I've been thinking about for a while, about the old asterisk thing. People will try to put it against the Premier League for banter, but I think it's quite a random flight of fancy that if Liverpool win the league and Man City win the Champions League, like, Man United fans are going to have to change the United club crest to an asterisk, because that's all they're going to have. All they're going to have left is a small, bitter piece of punctuation as a shield against them being absolutely slaughtered by their two biggest rivals.
Yeah, I think with the Premier League, we laugh and we joke about, like, the asterisks, and we kind of, as Liverpool fans, I think because of the nature of this title and the weight and the build-up and everything to do with it and that, it didn't really matter. Okay, put the asterisks there, it doesn't matter. It's still number 19. It's still, you know, a 30-year wait over. Don't really care. We've waited long enough. And I agree with Steve. The Prem's changed, but like we said before, the game hasn't changed. The nature of it hasn't changed. The alterations and things have been because of necessity. We say the five sub rules, we've just ripped into it, but we understand why. Mm-hmm. The drinks break, we don't like it, but we understand why. The Champions League completely changed. It's just filled the gap that the Euros were going to be. It is essentially just the Euros, but with, you know, club teams, and you can't then be on one side saying, you know, oh well, you won the Premier League, but it didn't really count. But the Champions League's completely different. Completely, it's a whole new competition. I agree with Sam of, you know, it should have just changed the name. It should have been, you know, the Champions Cup or whatever. It's not what the league and the kind of the enjoyment that fans get out of the Champions League. It's gone.
Yeah, this thing, it's funny, isn't it? Because perspective's massive in this. If we'd beaten Atletico, I would be annoyed that we would be in a position where, obviously, losing the power of Anfield and all that kind of stuff. But also, I would be getting dead excited about, like, a summer European tournament with club teams that I care about. The television revenues that are going to be, the viewing figures that are going to be absolutely mega, because it's not going up against anything all of a sudden. It gives us all something extra to do. But yeah, again, that's side of things. And I can't, personally, just going back to my point at the top, I can't get over the fact that, yeah, I'd be made up if City and even Chelsea went a bit deeper in that, because that does, for me, that can't possibly favour them moving forward into the next season. That puts them, yes, you know, you get the advantage if you win it and you get all the glory and all that kind of stuff. And I don't want either of those clubs, particularly Man City. Man City are a side that they will be made if they make it, if they win a European Cup. That finally completes the puzzle. You know, all those empty seats that we joke about won't be empty anymore, because the amount of fans you get from winning a Champions League. I know so many people, just being in a final, I know so many people who became Liverpool fans because they watched us play in Athens in 2007. We lost, but they saw it. It was there. It was in front of them, and there was enough for them to make their decision. That's a big thing. It's a kingmaker, really, the Champions League trophy. So yeah, it'd be great. But from Liverpool's perspective, and after having a rival and people you're going up against, basically, because how do you then, I just don't understand how you then do it. So you finish in footy, your last game of the season is the 23rd of August, which is then what, 3 weeks before the Premier League season is scheduled to start. But do you have a holiday then? Do you, but then, and then what? You take 2 weeks off and then you've got to get back up and running. Yeah, it's not a Liverpool problem, which is upsetting, because I'd love a seventh European Cup and that problem. But if we're given that we can't have it, I'd rather just have Liverpool, Klopp just get the time to work with the players, which would be absolutely glorious. Right, okay, let's get to a couple of questions before we wrap up. Cyber Symes asks, and Steve, I'll start with you first on this. As we're playing Crystal Palace on Wednesday, let's go off to a parallel universe. Where do you think the club would be if Roy Hodgson hadn't been sacked when he was?
In the Championship? No.
The Championship, yeah.
it's a good one. I don't know, mate, to be honest. It was bad. It was really, really bad. Obviously, by that point, the ownership had changed and stuff, so I don't think it would have been, we wouldn't have been bust like I thought we would have been under the owners, but it just was wrong. You know, it wouldn't be, we'd accepted, and I think it was almost like gallows humour, we'd accepted that Liverpool were just a bit crap and we were going to be a crap for a while, and he didn't have the ambition to change that, and the owners, fair play to them, did. Where would we be now? We would be like 11, Everton. yeah, an half decent Premier League team who can get the odd good result, but it's just a little bit of a letdown. That's we'd be Everton, yeah.
It's funny, isn't it, Sam? Because I look and seeing how good Liverpool are now makes me realise how incredibly biased I was towards everything that Liverpool have done beforehand, and thinking it was better than it was. And I wonder whether there's some Stockholm syndrome that would have kicked in with Roy Hodgson eventually, where we were led to believe that we were as good as we could possibly be. Like Liverpool, we're not really at the table with Manchester United. You know, like all of a sudden we are. You know, we should know our role as a small little parochial town in the northwest of England. And maybe focus on trying to win the occasional FA Cup. That's probably the way it would have gone. We've eventually browbeaten down to thinking that we should be crap.
I think it's interesting, because if you look at what he's doing now, I mean, you could say how he's learned from all his horrendous mistakes with England and Liverpool, but it's interesting because I wonder whether he was just way out of his depth with the players he had at the time, like Mascherano for a few games, Gerard, Torres, and you wonder whether 2 years down the line, if he'd have got his Benteke age 25, or if he'd have got, you know, his Zaha type, big strong winger who's got loads of assets, you know, whether with Gerard for a few more seasons, we'd have actually got a little bit better. I don't know, probably not. But I'd like to think that just us being Liverpool would have pushed on a little bit. But you know what, Steve? You took the words out of my mouth, mate. Everton is the answer. That is the answer, isn't it? I'm not having anything else. Everton is the answer.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I mean, that's it. There's not really much more to add, I guess, but that's the thing. Hodge always has a limit. And yeah, you know, it's like for me, it's like the Moyes at Man United argument. It's like, yeah, by all means, give him 5 years to, you know, give him a fair shake, let him buy his players. But I mean, he bought Paul Konchesky and Christian Poulsen, so it didn't bode particularly well.
It would have been, I think, Merseyside derbies would have been a lot more interesting because they'd be, you know, a little bit tighter. We might have had more 0-0 draws. I think that, like you said, the only potential silver lining is we may have won maybe more FA Cups and League Cups, because they're the only things we had going for us. Champions League, we could probably say goodbye to for a while, and we can remember the good old days of 2005. And I think Yeah, I just think it wouldn't have been a very great time. We'd probably either be Everton or Arsenal now, of like, oh dear, are we really a big club now?
Amazing. Yeah. Right, okay, Callum Buch wants to know the most obscure random fact that you know. Who wants to go first?
I'll take Georgia? It. I'll take it. The blob on your toothpaste, so when you put your toothpaste on your toothbrush, is called a nurdle.
A nurdle of toothpaste. There you go. You might be a little bit of a nurdle in knowing that, to be fair. Like, it's
is that not the best new insult you've got? Oh, shut up your nurdle.
Shut up your nurdle. Absolutely. Anyone else got any obscure random facts that they know? Tell me something you know.
Quantity.
Me next, right? I was doing a little bit of research actually. I was watching one of these game shows the other day, and I found out that the Canary Islands aren't named after birds, they're named after dogs. And I thought that was quite interesting, and that the bird is named because it was found on the island. That's what I thought. I thought they were just named after the little yellow birds, but it turns out they were named after the dog. And then they found the birds on the island, so we called them canaries. So I thought that was quite interesting, if nothing else. I think
there you
go. Cannon Ball's watching, actually, we're seeing that. But I think that I might be completely wrong, and it might not be a fact. And we might just be living in a new... But if politicians can bareface lie to people, then why can't I?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's bring a bit of fake news to the Red Men TV. It seems to be all the rage. Sam, have you got a fact for us?
You caught me before, you know. I'll be honest, I've been racking this for about half an hour. The only couple I can think of is work-wise. This is probably gonna bore the life out of you. Is I actually found this out. I've been doing some training and work recently for teachers, and you must have heard of, you know what a megabyte is, yeah? Mm-hmm. You know what comes before a megabyte, a kilobyte,
mm-hmm.
Yeah? Because obviously you deal with files all the time. Do you know what a byte is? That's the lowest. Do you know what half of a byte is called?
A picobite.
No, a nibble.
A nibble?
There you go. The lowest form of binary sort of collective number is a nibble. The only other one I've got is a singular scampi is scampo. There you go. Zoom quiz. Dummy. But yeah, a nibble. There you go.
Nibble. You can all take that away. The only one I've got is that 76.4% of statistics are made up on the spot. right, okay. Umar Awadali asks us, you have to join another fan base other than Liverpool anywhere in the world. Which fan base would you choose and why? Now, I'm guessing this means like you've got to swap your allegiances, not just you get to go and have a party with a different fan base, which is, you know, which I'd rather do. But go on, Steve, if you had to be a fan of another football club instead of Liverpool, who would it be?
This is hard because I want somewhere that's close. So that I can matches. Yeah, it's like two of the closest teams I really, really don't like. So it can't be Everton, it can't be Man United, it can't be City now because there's no chance. But I don't want to be someone in the, I don't want to be someone rubbish either. I want to support someone who's all right. Because I've done with Wigan still being in the Premier League, couldn't we? Maybe it'd have been them. You know what? Why not Samia? Why not Samia? I know the rubbish and stuff, but
it's the rubbish. It's the whittle.
Two great. Yeah, you know what? You're right. Two great answers.
And the eight scousers as yeah, well.
The tunnel fees alone are making me question. I find this. You know what? I might have to even consider just being like an abroad fan, like what Liverpool have got, and just pick a team who in a different country. So I will go and support. You know what? Give me Valencia. I like oranges.
Valencia. I'm a big fan of oranges.
Let's go Valencia. Why not? I don't know.
We have similar questions to this over the years, and one of them is normally like, if Liverpool didn't exist, who would you support? And the answer's just Everton, because the local team. So you'd have kind of, you just would support you just support Everton because there would have been no Liverpool. It never would have been a choice. But if I had to choose, there's no chance on God's earth I'm choosing Everton, because why would you choose to actively put yourself through that? That's like, I mean, some people are banging into, you know, BDSM and sadomasochism and all that kind of stuff. I just love being like kicked in the balls. But that's like getting booted, you know, for like, oh, no, not for me. So, no, I you're right. I agree. I would glory hunt. I would either glory hunt and go and be like a Real Madrid fan. So, I'd be like a New York Red Bulls fan. And that way that when I know when I'm going to games, I get to go and fly over to New York. And so at least I'm getting to do like, I put a cool trip into it. Go on, Georgia, you could join another fan base other than Liverpool. What is it?
Probably Atletico. I know we have our like our qualms because of, you know, whatever they did, but I've always liked them, and I think there's always been that bit of connection with Liverpool. And for Torres alone, I probably would have supported them. And I just think they're the right sort of, you know, you're Real Madrid, you're Barcelona, there's always a chance. You got the Champions League and cup runs and things. I probably would have done Atletico. Plus, nice kit, so.
Yeah, decent, Sam.
Well, the extreme socialist in me says San Paolo all day, but I'm a little bit like yourself. If I'm going to go abroad, it's got to be someone who's relatively successful, because it's great being a Liverpool fan, isn't it? I'm going to go Borussia Dortmund. There's just a lot of similarities. Celtic would be an easy answer, but the league's shit. I couldn't be arsed watching that on a Sunday afternoon against St. Mirren. So Borussia Dortmund for me, you know, it's an easy sideways step, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. Okay, yeah, well, let us know if you had to support another Liverpool fan base anywhere in the world, who would it be? Leave us some, if anyone wants to let their imaginations run riot on the Roy Hodgson alternate universe thing, then do so in the comments underneath. If we get any absolute belters, we'll try and we'll put them out on Twitter, and we'll try and introduce them into the show next week as well. But yeah, guys, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast this week. If you are listening on good podcasting apps, make sure you leave a 5-star review. And don't forget the Fan Zone commentary. If you missed out at the weekend, it is coming back Wednesday. We're going to be live 45 minutes before kickoff. That is 7:30. We're actually going to be live then, hopefully. We've got 2 days of testing between now and then. Hopefully all the kinks should be ironed out. Me and Chris having a laugh, doing the world's most biased football commentary ever. And hopefully we'll take a step closer to the title. Guys, thank you so much. And yeah, we'll be back with more podcasty goodness next week.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.